Pure Dog Talk is the voice of purebred dogs. We talk to the legends of the sport and give you the tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Today's show is brought to you by Show Dog Prep School. Online courses, webinars, and mentor programs on demand at showdogprepschool.com. Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves, and this is a really fun guest today, you guys. I have Suzanne Clothier. She's an author. Bones Would Rain from the Sky is her book that I expect many of you have seen. She is a dog trainer and just got a lot of really great information for us. I think ways to think about how we work with our dogs. So welcome, Suzanne.
Hi, thanks for having me, Laura.
Appreciate you coming to join us today. So we have what we call the 411. Can you give us just a little bit of 411? Tell us about yourself, what led you to this work. You have a very fascinating history that I'd like to share with our listeners.
Well, I'm pretty sure I'm one of those people that was literally born to do what I'm doing. My mother used to say that I learned to talk only so I could ask for a pony. That was my first and earliest request. So, yeah, it's Christmas time right now, right? So there was a point where they had a live creche when I was maybe 4 or 5. And so everyone else went to look at the trees and the lights and all that. And I had spotted the sheep, the donkey, and the... You know, the critters. So of course,
I'd be at the donkey in a heartbeat.
Yes. You know, I could be my own little baby Jesus. That was fine with me. So animals have been my whole life. And other than a 2-day stint of a temporary secretary, everything I've done professionally has been with animals. So I live with animals. I breathe animals. I dream about animals. I sleep with a lot of animal hair on my pillow. It's just an animal life. It always has been. I can't even imagine doing anything but what I do. So that kind of lifelong passion has informed a pretty interesting journey in trying to understand my various animal friends better, try to figure out the mistakes I made and why. Yeah, it just takes me down a lot of different rabbit holes, from science to behavior to some pretty far out there new age stuff long before it was cool to be new age and everyone thought I should have a bone in my nose for being just a little too weird.
Oh my gosh, that's fabulous. And so talk to me a little bit about the impetus behind Bones Would Rain from the Sky. And you're talking really about developing relationships, and we're going to do a little bit more on this later, but it's a fascinating book and it has a lot to say about how we work with our animals. And I mean, primarily our listeners are purebred dog owners, but they have cats and horses and all kinds of cool stuff. So
as a trainer, I did two things, right? One was I lived with my animals as my friends, as my buddies, and I had them as a part of my life for the sheer pleasure of simply sharing my life with them. No expectations, just getting to know them. And it's why I surround myself with a lot of different species. I find all their needs different. But then as a trainer, right, there's this, you know, we're going to teach this dog this, and this horse needs to learn that. And then, of course, there's competition, and then there's rules,
right,
and there's points, and there's ribbons.
Right.
And I began to realize that in the non-training times, I had tremendously lovely relationships with animals. And yet, where the conflict came as a rule was when I decided in my human wisdom that this animal needed to learn this thing. And I didn't have the humility or the grace to recognize that, A, maybe they didn't need to, B, they didn't care, C, they had learned it and I'd missed that and was drilling them needlessly like some insane grade school teacher making them write it out 500 times. And so I started to think, like, this doesn't feel like it does when I'm just walking through the fields with them. This doesn't feel like it does when I'm just goofing around the living room. So what's going on? That really took me down the relationship path. So hard to believe, but I sold Bones to the publisher back in 1998, so it's 20
wow.
years ago.
Right.
It was so ahead of its time that they were really uncomfortable. They did not know how to categorize it because no one was talking about relationship. They were talking about behavior. You know, clicker training was coming up to the fore. Everyone was getting excited about that. And I'm off on some other tangent here, saying, you know,
right.
there's something else that's more important under here, and it's actually the whole ball of wax. Because if you have a nice working relationship, if you have a trusting relationship, you have a joyful relationship, then it's just a matter of what do you two enjoy doing together? And that changes everything.
Well, and I think it's very, very interesting, Suzanne. I talk to my classes, I talk to my listeners a lot about when you're teaching a dog to be, say, for example, a show dog. And what we see at home isn't what we see in the ring. And I think what you're talking about here is fabulous because it makes us stop and examine what we're doing wrong, not what the dog is doing wrong.
Right. So the dog's just telling you his truth in that moment. So I used to do show handling classes, so a little known aspect of my background, which most people have never even heard of, is the whole gig. I've done that circuit. I've done Westminster and got the ribbons to show and blah, blah, blah. And the last Brittany litter I bred, the puppy I chose from that litter was the national specialty winner.
Nice.
I've been there and done that, had the T-shirt.
Right.
Ruined it, cleaning up something, dog spilled on me. But yeah, what I started to realize in my show handling classes was this was a skill like any other. So one, we're asking dogs to go out there and be like on stage. So we're like some crazy stage mamas who are like, of course you want to stand up and have everyone stare at you. And just like a lot of kids, many dogs think, no, I don't.
That's really awful.
I'm good, right? So they don't all have what I call the Sandra D gene. You know, hey, everybody, lucky for you, I showed up today.
Right.
And you can all go home. Some dogs think, oh, I do not want to be here. She's going to make me. So at home where they're comfortable, it's like you singing in the shower, right?
Yeah.
That is not the same as auditioning for The Voice.
Right.
So in our show handling classes, the one thing I really got to was number one, how do we make this joyful and participatory for the dogs? So how about we start with actually teaching them what to do instead of dragging them around by their throats? So we had really nice, happy show dogs because they knew what to do. They knew how to be right. We also made sure their handlers knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we very carefully worked on, it's scary to have a stranger when you're on the table, you know, decide to bounce up and down on your rump or crank your jaws open. So we counter-conditioned for that. We taught it carefully. And it was one of the great joys of my life to take what can be really uncomfortable for many dogs, which is showing and being competitive, and turning them into happy dogs who may not have thought that was the best thing to do on the planet, but they knew how to do it. They were confident and they were comfortable. And I think that's fair to ask in anything that we're going to ask a dog to do, unless it's medically necessary or some emergency where none of us have a choice. And that is fairly rare, actually.
Well, and I think it's very interesting. I teach, for example, Freestack, and I never put a leash on the dog. We call it hands-free technology. And they learn how to read my body language and do all the rest of it using food and using just eye contact, a watch me command. And so that kind of stuff, what you're talking about, I love. We're talking about the same thing with different names. I think it's fabulous. So this is part and parcel of what you're talking about, the relationship-centered training. Am I correct?
Right. So, you know, in the old days, I mean, I came up through the ranks, right? I grew up in the hunter-jumper world as a kid working at Barnes as a barn rat and wanted to be a horse trainer, not a dog trainer, but I couldn't afford to be a horse trainer. So
Nobody can.
I switched it. I know. I just couldn't find a rich guy to marry. And
there
my mom
go.
Was like,
there
what you are
go.
You joking? So I just decided I'd be a dog trainer and have horses, and that worked out fine. So the thing that it was like, which methodology, which piece of equipment, and I kept thinking, that's not actually how to sort this out. First, I have to assess everything by this one yardstick. How does this affect the relationship between me and this animal? Period. If it's a methodology that the dog says, hey, that works for me, you know, I'm good with that. I'm happy. Mm-hmm. I'm cooperative, then we're okay. But as soon as the dog says that, it's not okay. It's what I call the light in the dog's eyes. And all of us know what it looks like, and we're all addicted to it. It's that just pure, clean, bright light that they look at us, and there's just not a care in the world, right? They're just purely, absolutely who they are. It's what we all want to see. So anything that even vaguely dim that light, whoa, I had to put the brakes on and say, wait, why do I feel this is necessary? You know, the famous line, I had to. It's like, wow, such a slippery slope. You probably didn't, but you got to be willing to sit back, look at yourself and say, I have a lot of control and power here, and I need to use it very wisely. So when I keep the relationship central to all, It is just simply for me the best barometer of how to stay humane, fair, loving, and respectful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. What you're talking about, the two different relationship assessment tool and a functional assessment tracking. And so you're taking that relationship building that you're talking about and applying some tools to diagnose. Is that accurate?
Right. So the relationship assessment tool, it really came out of me thinking that perhaps I'm the world's laziest dog trainer. Because clients would arrive and I would watch them get their dog out of the car. And then by the time they walked over to the gate to come into the yard or into my training area, I was like, yep, right, pretty much have that worked out.
Right.
And then it was just
right.
a matter of how I was going to help them. But I could see what the underlying dynamics were that were possibly really contributory to whatever they were presenting. And so I started to think, you know, man, I'm just so lazy that how is it I can get this stuff done in an hour and suss it out pretty quickly and pretty accurately? And then I read Blink.
Mm.
So once I read Blink, I understood that what I was doing was rapid cognition, that I was just recognizing patterns of interaction. The same way if you approach, say, you're going to go meet a couple for dinner, and as you're walking across the restaurant to meet them, you're assessing what they're doing, and both of them have this look on their face, and you think, oh, no, this is not going to be a good... Apparently, they're still fighting about
right.
that, and you're
right.
like,
right.
I can't wait right. to spend 2 hours. That's just awesome. So you've made that rapid assessment based on what's going on. So RAT is actually a tool for trainers to look at the dynamics, because the dog brings himself to the picture,
mm-hmm.
and the handler brings themselves, and they both have habits. So my goal as a trainer is, how do I know which end of the leash here is contributing? Who do I have to address? And what are the most critical things I need to fix so that everything else can fall into place? And above all, where's the strong parts? Where's the good stuff? Every relationship has something we can build on. So I'm looking for what I call the fireflies, because there's a great quote from Buddha that says, enlightenment is not a sunrise, it's fireflies. So I'm looking for the fireflies in that relationship, and then I can build on that light. And it's a good way. It's an immediate, very fast assessment, and you can track changes over time. You can swap up dogs, like I might take one dog and put one dog with you that's perfectly cooperative and well-trained, and if I still see that you're not getting good results, it's very clear. You know, maybe it's Laura, maybe it's not
yeah,
the dog.
Right. Right.
Or
right.
you could be doing everything right, but the dog's the one we need to focus on. He's got the biggest needs. So that's one tool, and that's really for trainers.
Mm-hmm.
It helps handlers because they get to say, like, I did not think about that. We don't
right.
tend to think
right.
about this is an equation and we've got parts contributing. We tend to think, how do I stop this dog? How do I make him do this? How do I change that behavior? Instead of, whoa, let's back it out, look at it in the context.
Right. I almost 98% of the time think that the problem is the person, not the dog. I'm just sorry. I know that sounds terrible, but there.
Yeah,
really?
No, I don't think
really?
That's fair. No,
oh,
not at all.
Interesting.
No.
Interesting.
Depends on the population of dogs you deal with.
It's true. It's true.
Right. So if you think that the dog, let's just say here's a common example. You get a person who's somewhat impatient and they
mm-hmm.
kind of want to pressure the dog, or sometimes they do it in a nice way, thinking they're being kind because they use food, but it's still pressure. It's like the indecent proposal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, will you sleep with me fairly and bust? Will you do it if I have chicken liver?
The
same exact question, right? And it's just as inappropriate, I think. But let's say we have a person who likes to grab for the dog, reach for the dog. They're just more physical, but we have a dog who's sensitive to that. I'm sensitive to movement. So one of the things I need to do for that dog is definitely get his handler more aware and far less grabby. But at the same time, I may need to help counter-condition the dog so that he's not carrying that big concern around. There's absolutely contribution from both sides. It's easy to blame the handlers, but
right.
in reality, no. The dogs bring their own stuff, and some dogs are really, truly quite challenging.
Yeah.
Owner.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think you just made a really good point right there. It's often the combination, you know, where a certain dog I will struggle with. I frequently
right.
have had over the years, I've had lots and lots of young kids that work for me or help me out at the dog show or whatever. And most
mm-hmm.
of them, because I find that we as children, it's easier for us when we're kids to make those connections. I don't know why that is, but I find that to be true. And so if I have, say, a particularly soft dog that I'm having a struggle making a breakthrough with, I'll have the young person work with it, and they are fine. you know, so there is a better match.
You know, and that's the fascinating part about rat, because we could take that same exact dog and do a rat on you and that dog, mm-hmm. and then I could mm-hmm. do a rat on that dog with that kid, mm-hmm. and it's like there's a reason there's sparks and rub here, mm-hmm. and there's agreement and cooperation there.
Yep.
And that's what makes rat a really cool tool. It's on the books for this winter to get that as an online course for trainers.
Nice.
So they'll be able to do that. Functional assessment tracking is a completely different kettle of fish. And this is about how is this dog functioning? So not what is his temperament like, not what is his breed, not what is his training, but literally how is he functioning? So, you know, it's so perfunctory for us to ask, how are you doing today? Well, if I really said, well, I got to tell you, Laura, my left knee's kind of hurting and I've got a migraine, so I hope this interview is not going to last long because I got to go throw up now. And you're like,
oh,
I'm sorry, do you want to reschedule? But the dog has the same issue. So what FAD is tracking is literally asking the dog, how are you doing today? Because the dog may have a lovely temperament or he may not have a lovely temperament, but either
right.
way, how is he physiologically functioning? How is he functioning cognitively? And how is he functioning socially with people, other dogs? Absence of this familiar person. So there's 15 different points we look at.
Interesting.
They're all scored. And so FAT is an app that we've created that lets you track that. So you could, for example, take a dog out on a show circuit and say, wow, at home, he's a 10. He's doing great mm-hmm. on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. But you know what? Every time we get to day 3 on a show circuit, he stops eating.
Mm-hmm.
He's got diarrhea. Mm-hmm. He's really kind of not cooperating in the ring. He gets really worried if I leave him in the motorhome.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's like he's not functioning. He's telling you this situation is stressing me.
Mm-hmm.
I need some help here. And that could be acute. It could be chronic. It could help you track, does this food, does this medication, does this training regimen, does this handler, does this lifestyle suit this dog? Are we getting better, worse? What's going on? Because that gives us clues, but we don't tend to think in great detail. It's like, oh, he's fine. And when I say, oh, do you pack any special food when you're on the road? And they're like, oh, yeah, I got to pack the pumpkin for the diarrhea, and then I have to always bring him stuff for my meal at the restaurant. It's like, right, because his appetite's changed because he's stressed.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean
mm-hmm.
he's going to fall apart and die, but you need to recognize that he's telling you, under these conditions, I'm struggling to function a bit.
That is so fascinating because as a dog handler, I spent most of my time working with what I always called special needs dogs, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, seriously. And all of these things, and I think this applies to a lot of us as handlers, because we do so much of this, we're doing a lot of those steps without putting names to it, without doing it intentionally. Do you know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? Like, I'll use a perfect example. This is such a great example because he was the dog I had to get into his head the most. Had a Spinoni that had, at 2 years old, never been off the ranch. He really just didn't know there were 100 people in the world.
Oh, geez.
Oh, serious. Truly serious. And this became a best in show dog. And the process of taking him from that point where he would not eat, you know, you turn on the blow dryer, he flew off the table, bounced off the wall, everything from that point to best in show, that whole 2 year process is exactly what you're talking about here, and trying to identify and dial in and meet these specific needs and do these specific things based on this specific activity. And I'm just listening to you talk, I'm like, wow, that is cool.
Well, right. So this app, if you can read, it'll take
right.
you through. You just tick off what you've observed,
mm-hmm.
and it then scores it for you. So it's either a green, you know, he's good
mm-hmm.
to go.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a few quirks here and there, but nothing that's going to really affect him. Yellow, you've got some stuff you need to pay attention to. This dog needs to be supported. And red is, well, we've got some serious issues here.
Mm-hmm.
So it will fluctuate as the dog does. But then it prints it out as a really cool graphic, which you can email. It gets
mm-hmm.
stored in the app under that dog's profile. So over time, you can look at it and say, wow. The other cool thing is it allows you to transmit that, because it's really hard, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
When you send that dog back to his owner,
right.
you're like, so
right.
this should keep working. And you call and you say, how's he doing? They're like, oh, he's fine. Well, he's fine is not actually an answer.
Exactly.
What you
exactly.
need to know, or what you need to communicate. You know, you can say to the owner, here, I'm going to email you his FAT for today. We're going to do one every 2 days. And it's like, yep, this is great. This circuit, he's eating. This circuit, he worked beautifully in the ring. This circuit, he was calm when I had to leave him. So you can track progress up or down, but you can share that. And then the app also lets you put in to that dog's records anything, photos, pedigrees, right. vet records, reports. So anyone in charge of that dog can tap into that and say, where is he? So for people who do pet sitting or house right. sitting or boarding kennels, it's like, please, let's right. get an accurate stat, and I'll tell you how he's doing while we have him. Because it's that thing, right? And I'm sure you had that where the owner forgot to tell you a few
yeah.
little details.
Minor details.
Like, oh, yeah, when were you going to tell me that? Or if you forget to ask, right?
Right.
So Fat
right.
makes sure that everybody is on the same detailed page.
Right.
And so you're like, whoa, what's going on here? This didn't used to be a yellow score.
Right. I feel like this app may have just downloaded my entire brain. I love it.
Well, it did, and as a good professional, it is what good professionals are clicking off in their head
right.
automatically.
But this
you don't
is a tool.
Communicate it.
Right. Well, and I think it's not just that you don't communicate it. You don't think of it, this is what I said before, intentionally. Like you're doing
no.
it from your gut. You're doing it from instinct, from experience,
mm-hmm.
from, you know, what have you. I love that this gives me, even an experienced person, a way to identify and really quantify. I love that. And for people who aren't as experienced, something to draw on. And I just think that's very cool.
I think it's going to really change how we see dogs because, as you just said, for those who don't have that experience,
right.
it helps them learn to think in detail systematically.
Right.
For people like us who are getting older every day.
Every minute, dude.
We don't have to try to remember, like,
right.
2 weeks ago, was he okay if I gave him that in
right.
the stomach bowl? Or is he the one that I had to feed on the mat?
Right. Exactly.
It's like I can look as the dog comes back into my care.
Right.
And it's like, oh, yeah, right. Knew it. Mm-hmm. So that we can relax and know that we're going to be able to tag it. Because the more dogs you take care of,
yeah.
like you said, there's yeah. so many things you do automatically. It's like, why do I feed him first?
Right.
It's like, because he's going to get himself in a total swivet. And also, he needs to be in that room.
Right.
He hates when that guy's even looking at his dish.
Well, and I think that what you just said right there, I think is really fascinating. Because when I, again, I'm taking care of the dogs, I'm feeding, I'm doing this. Everything is in a process for a reason that I know
mm-hmm.
in my head. But trying to remember all of the reasons and communicate them to whoever it is helping me that day or the assistant. And we don't always have consistent people working with us. And so
exactly.
for 15 or 20 dogs going through your head and saying, no, you have to do this with this and this. And I love this as a way to check all those boxes. And I just think that's very cool.
So I think it's going to make for better animal caretaking. And I think it just clarifies for everybody, you know, what does this dog need? Because otherwise, it's the dog that pays the price.
Right. Absolutely.
Pure and simple.
Absolutely.
He's the one who got to eat his meal next to the lunatic who's, you know, trying to get through the crate. It's like, because the guy
right.
helping you didn't understand that
right.
if those two are side by side, this dog's going to have odds at it for 2 hours.
Right. Exactly. Fascinating.
That's my goal.
I like it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really powerful. We'll release that in January as our goal.
As an app.
January.
Okay. Very cool. All right. And listeners, just remember, I'll have links and you can get to the website and get all of this information more directly. They'll be in the blog post. Hang tight, guys. Got a little bit of information for you. We'll be right back to the podcast in a minute.
How much is that dog in the window?
Okay, crew. I hear it pretty much every day now. I love Pure Dog Talk. And that makes my heart happy, because I love doing it. I started hosting Pure Dog Talk as a way to reach out to members of our community with education and resources to enable you to succeed and move forward in your goals and ambitions. And your response has been literally overwhelming. The podcast has been downloaded well over 250,000 times to date. That's incredible. All of this information is free to exhibitors around the world at the touch of a button. But here's the reality check. Money really does make the world go round, guys. So I created a special patrons group. This funding source helps cover the expenses of audio editing and website hosting and technology and like that. Patrons keep Pure Dog Talk's fountain of knowledge flowing freely. And like the NPR of dogdom, our patrons support Pure Dog Talk with monthly gifts. We even offer advertising and sponsorship opportunities that you guys may not have known about. So drop me a note, Laura@puredogtalk.com, and I'll let you know how you can help share the love. Talk to me about the evaluation, the temperament evaluation, that CARROT program. Is this something you're doing for puppies or really only for older dogs, or how are you applying this?
So CARROT is actually a scoring system, and CARROT stands for the Clothier Animal Response Assessment Tool. It's you know, just a weird little acronym to remind you there's a gem in every dog. So it's actually a scoring tool for temperament, and it's unusual in that it's bidirectional. So we'll just take, for example, I show you a snake, and I don't know about you, but, you know, maybe you say snake and you run away.
Yes.
And I say snake, and I say, oh, goody, how close can I get and see what it's like? So there's both extremes. There's what we call left shift, so the more inhibited, avoidant, not so sure, lacking confidence kind of dog. And then there's the other side, the, oh, yeah, like, cool. So we look at different qualities that, in my experience, I'll be breeding generation number 10 this winter. So I've raised a lot of puppies and watched a lot of things go by and by. And so I just think about temperament differently than other people, clearly. So this is a scoring system, which the basics of it are fairly easy to learn. Actually learning how to read it all on the fly is very difficult. It's really a professional's tool. And so I created tests that would actually show us what we wanted to see. So, for example, so it could be puppies. I have a puppy test, and I also have an adult dog test.
Okay, so you do have one for puppies. I mean, that's for me. Yeah. I'm always looking for, I mean, I know at this point, like you say, I'm a generation 8 or something that I'll be whelping next year. And so I have a pretty good gut read, but I found, like the Volhard test, I've always just kind of clicked through those boxes just to kind of make sure that I'm on target. So that's why I'm always looking for other interesting temperament tests. That's why I was asking about it specifically as applicable for puppies. And I think our listeners, as breeders, as people who are buying a puppy, that this might have information that would be useful for them.
I think it is, but the problem is it is, number one, I'm not going to publish it because I've been around for so long, and the Volhard test is inaccurate at best.
Yeah.
And floppy, and it confounds a lot of stuff. You know, right from the get-go, right? You put a puppy down, you clap your hands and call him. Well, I tell people, go out in the street and yell, hey, lady, and see who turns around. That doesn't mean they want to talk to you. It just means they're orienting and they can hear.
Right.
So CARROT takes a completely different approach and breaks things down in a very specific way, and it's very, very clear what we're asking, why we're asking it, and how it gets asked. So learning how to apply that test, the application of the test, it's scoring it. So it's quite accurate. We just did a seminar in Maryland where I had done a litter of Aussies and assessed them as a puppy test. And then they came back at almost 3 years old, and we were able to put them through an abbreviated test.
Nice.
And it was really cool for the audience to be able to see, like, there you go. Same stuff you did as a puppy. He's just doing it bigger now. So it's a powerful tool in that way. So the trick would be, can you find someone who's familiar with CARROT and certified in CARROT? And this year, in the next 6 months or so, we should have a number of people around the country who are certified and can come out and do the testing for breeders.
Very, very cool.
But it's not a simple, hey, I read this and now I'm going to do it and I don't really know what I'm doing. I'm picking off boxes. It's like, no, and that's why I won't publish it. I just won't.
Okay.
Will not.
Very cool. Well, I think that's something that's really important for people to understand, that what you see in a litter, what I see in a litter, and what the person who's coming who's not had the access to those same lines, to that same breed, to that, you know, whatever it is, we see different things in different ways for different reasons.
You know, the temperament test itself will start to shape what you're looking for. So what I just find is that I want to be sure that if I have things happening all at once, that I know that they're happening all at once, and I also ask in different ways. So there's a tendency for all temperament tests to kind of have a do this, score that, do this, score that, do this, score that, and CARROT doesn't work that way. CARROT says, let me see what the patterns of temperament are. So sociability, we put the puppy down, person's not saying anything. They're just sitting perpendicular to the puppy. Does the puppy even care to investigate and find a person, or would they rather explore their environment first, or maybe they don't even see the person, they're caught by something they smell. No good or bad, it's just who they are.
Right.
But I do not score the puppy sociability solely on that. want to see what happens when the tester gets up without saying a word and moves. Does the puppy register that, you know, and how does the puppy use space? So sociability is the dog even interested in interactions? You have to prompt it or the puppy comes flying over. Right. But then we also talk about use of space. So how does this puppy use space when he is interacting? Because you can go through a puppy test and never once even begin to come close to tripping on a puppy.
Right.
And there's others you think, I'm not going to live through this.
It's going to be under my feet the entire time.
Yeah. And then we have social tolerance. So for me, those are the social traits.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have a dog who's very sociable and who uses space like, you know, you think your spleens are going to be melded together. But then when you go to touch the dog or restrain him, he's like, oh, I don't think so.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be the other way around. The dog's not really interested in the interaction, but you can do anything to him. They're very different traits. They are not one and the same. So Carrot really parses things apart and really in some great detail says this is this, and it's scaled pretty finely.
Yeah, that's what I could see on the website. It looked really, really interesting. Okay, so... In closing, I was, you know, kind of cruising through your Facebook page and getting ready for this interview, and this particular quote really caught my eye, and I think that partly because we live in a world now that is, here in the dog world particularly, very, very, I'm not going to say oppositional, but everybody's got a side. I'm either a this trainer or a that trainer or another kind of trainer, and this really, really spoke to me. Our dogs live in a world of nuance, and we understand them best when we also seek nuanced understanding. And pretending status does not exist in social animals doesn't help them. And throwing out overly simplified constructs, well, that's always a good idea. So that was your quote, and yep. It just really spoke to me. And the idea of having a deep and wide and rich toolbox with which to work with our dogs.
I think we've gotten, and I think this is human nature, right? We really find it easier by far to deal with all or none.
Yes.
You know, when there's gray areas in anything, some of us handle that better than others. Some of us actually like paradox, and some of us really think, well, they can't both be true.
Mm-hmm.
And I will stick with the one that's most comfortable or the one that I know best.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's quite a go, and we do this all the time. If you look at, you know, the political state in any country, we prefer, it's easier for us to go into all or none. And then there's something called a model swing, where if we start in one belief, so let's just say we grew up as I did in the old-fashioned Keeler-based, you know, jerk and holler method, and can you be fair using that and still have dogs like you and perform well for you? Of course. Because otherwise we would never have gotten where we've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of human nature, right? Doesn't mean it's ideal, and it doesn't mean it worked for all dogs, but the reality is it has its effectiveness. But when we discover another way, as I did, and I felt bad about all the things I'd done to dogs in the name of training, because that's all I knew, and that was what was all around me, the tendency is to swing not just to moderate yourself, but to go to the complete opposite end of the spectrum
right. And
say, I will never do that again. I'm throwing away all my leashes
right. And
collars, and I will never, never. As soon as the word never comes into your vocabulary, you're in dangerous ground.
Love that.
Never, never land is the go as a trainer. And so it takes time, and I think it takes some courage to not just swing to the other side and cling to it rabidly, because there's a section of dog training in this world. I call them the violently positive.
Right.
They're not joking. They are as entrenched and hardcore and dismissive of anything else as anyone on the other side of the spectrum.
Yeah.
So I think we got to find where the dogs live. So dogs tell me, like, oh, we say no to each other all the time. I mean, I watch it. We've got 7 dogs. And I watched the puppy the other day tell the 14-year-old, like, look, old man, that's still my goat horn.
Right.
Like, no.
Right.
No, you may not have it.
Right.
I was like, well, good for you, kid.
And that right there, you just nailed it. I think if we can quit imposing our ideas on the dogs and listen to what their ideas are and see how they interact successfully with one another,
right. We're
going to get a lot further.
Sure, I didn't say to my dogs, I don't know how to tell you this, guys, but there is no social status and everyone's equal.
Right.
Because they would have looked at me if they could have talked, right. Like, what are you talking about?
Right, exactly.
It's not even vaguely true. Do you not
There's
understand
There's definitely,
that concept?
Exactly. And anybody who has never seen, you know, one old tough bitch and the young tough bitch, and the combination is not pretty, people.
No, and so they all play it, right? So if it's, mm-hmm. if it's a compatible group, mm-hmm. and everyone's in agreement, then status means nothing.
Right.
As I say, if the Queen of England decides to sit down in her underwear and play chess with you, God bless, right? If you try to force the Queen to strip, yes. to her underwear and play chess with you, you may have a problem. And I'm betting she's going to pull rank and call for some guards.
Yep.
But if she's agreed to it, if there's agreement and cooperation, status doesn't matter.
Right.
So we circle right back to relationship. If I have a cooperative, respectful, mutually joyful, trusting relationship, then it's just a matter of what do we agree to do, and then how do we negotiate the tricky spots where we may not be in agreement.
Right.
And it comes down to being as simple as that.
Right. It's beautiful. All right. Suzanne, thank you so very much for your time. I really, really appreciate it. This has been a fabulous conversation. And listeners, as I mentioned, there will be links on the website and the blog post for you to go find out more information if you'd like to get some more downloading of your brain into the app. I love it.
Thank you so much for giving me a chance to share my great passion, which is how do we get it right with these animals that do so much for our lives and just make them so rich.
Excellent.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Suzanne. As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. The Dog Show Superintendents Association is a proud supporter of Pure Dog Talk. Our Dog Show Superintendents are the hardworking people who make the dog show function. They are advocates for education and mentorship in the purebred dog fancy. So stop by the Supers desk at your next show. Tell them how much you love Pure Dog Talk and give them a shout out for their support. That's all for today. Thank you for joining us on Pure Dog Talk.